Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. Now, back to more Fred and Xander on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
So, Bears fans may or may not be calmed down after the entire Andy Dalton signing. And then
Why did you remind me? Saying
that Andy Dalton's number one. He's number one. He's number one. He's QB1. He's your guy.
He's it.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody would
be happy
about that.
You just had to show up and sign something.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're in.
I don't know anybody else that was happy about that except for Andy Dalton.
And his family.
Yeah.
Maybe his family.
And again, it's not his fault. Just like you and I have talked about, people don't like us on the radio. It's not our fault. Somebody hired us. So anyway.
Don't blame me.
It's right. Don't blame me if I'm not good. It's somebody hired me. Hopefully they'll be back next week. But Andy Dalton is now number one. Nick Foles still around. And talk some more about the Chicago Bears. We bring in Patrick Finley from the Sun-Times. Patrick, how are you today?
Hey there.
I'm not too bad. How about you guys?
Doing well. Good. Were you one of the people excited about Andy Dalton, or is it just him and his family?
One of the only people.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. You referenced the QB1 tweet that the Bears sent with a picture of Andy Dalton, and that really angered a lot of fans. What are they supposed to do? Like they just paid a guy $10.5 million. For 1 year.
Right.
You're going to be mad because they dare call them QB1? Like, I thought that perfectly encapsulated kind of the anger of Bears fans, particularly on Twitter this offseason.
Oh, no doubt.
But also, I thought it was a little over the top.
And probably yeah. so. But yeah. it's not surprising.
Well, because there was
not at all.
No, because everybody had the guy that they wanted. I don't think many people had Andy Dalton on the list, at least this year. Last year, maybe, no. When you could have got him cheaper.
No, Sam Darnold was probably the guy on my list when the offseason started, and I started asking around, and more people than not just said, he's not very good.
Yeah.
and so he moved down my list. I didn't think it would be Dalton, and guys, I wouldn't get too hung up on this. Let's wait and see what they do during the draft. I don't think that they can move up into that top five or six to guarantee themselves a quarterback.
But right.
Maybe round two, or maybe they trade back into late round one if they're worried. If somebody like Davis Mills may go earlier than they think, I bet you they come away with another quarterback here in the next 4 or 5.
Well, it's funny, too, because you mentioned Darnold, and it's like, okay, Darnold is not good, but he's young. Andy Dalton is old, but would you also say not good? So it's interesting that we'll take the not good young guy because he's still got time to become good.
But didn't we have that guy in Mitch Trubisky?
Apparently not.
Well, that was my original argument for Darnold, which is, what is he? Is he 9 months younger than Joe Burrow? Something
yeah.
like that? Like,
yeah.
He's still a kid, but I think if you had to win a game tomorrow, I think Andy Dalton's probably the better of the two, but, the ceiling there is absolutely not what it would be with almost anybody else we could have dreamed up here.
Red, I think he had no shot to be, welcomed passionately by the Bears fans. It's just the situation he's been put in, and he does deserve to get looked at and a chance before everybody poo-poos him. As far as the draft goes, the Bears have to take a quarterback, right? I mean, they can't really walk away from this draft without one.
I mean, you'd think so.
Well, right. I know. I get common sense. But
yeah.
I think they do if there's somebody they like. I don't think they're going to take one just to say they did. Obviously, if they worried kind of what the casual fan thought about their decisions at quarterback, we probably wouldn't be sitting here with Andy Dalton and with Nick Foles as the two guys. My bet would be that it's on day two. I think it would take a lot of capital for them to move up. And then if you get into day two, and I wrote about this in the Sun Times yesterday,
yep.
You're looking at Davis Mills from Stanford, who's started 11 whole college games, but at one point was the best prospect in America, as a high schooler, as a drop-back passer. You've got Kellen Mond from Texas A&M. He's super athletic, was the quarterback in the number 14 in America last year, started for 4 years. And then you've got Kyle Trask at Florida. I think he would probably be the third out of the three if you had me make a list, but you know, he's really interesting. He did not start his first 3 years of high school or his first 3 years of college. And then last year he was a Heisman Trophy finalist.
Jeez.
So he's got an unusual background, and I put Ian Book on my list too. Just, you know, I think he kind of, you know, represents that third tier of quarterbacks that the Bears could look at, whether it's Book, whether it's the kid from Texas, now that the Bears employ the former Texas head coach. You know, there are a couple other guys that might make sense. But in terms of, you know, who interests me, you know, Davis Mills, Kellen Mond, I think are the two if you're not going to pick one in the top half of the draft.
Yeah, for those who didn't see this, this is one of the reasons I want to get you on, because I was reading your article yesterday and I printed up the four that you just listed, and you put down, you know, the reasons for it and everything else like that, and that's pretty interesting. Because as we get closer to the draft, I mean, there are still people that are thinking the Bears could make a deal, but you see some of the deals that were made, San Francisco moving from 13 to 3, and you know, Miami moving down to 12 and then in 6 and all the other stuff. So it looks like Miami's set with their quarterback. It looks like the top three are going to go top three, and apparently the Niners' brain trust isn't quite agreed upon what they like at that third position. But do you see the Bears still trying to move up at 20? And if not, if they stay where they're at, what would you think they're going to take at that 20th pick? Because after losing Kyle Fuller, now they have another open spot.
I think it would take one of the five quarterbacks falling a little bit further than we thought he would to get him within a reasonable distance of the Bears trading up. You know, who knows? Maybe Ryan Pace shocks the world and trades three first-round picks to move up and draft fourth. You know, he might have to give up a little more than that even. It might be three ones and a two or something like that. But I don't think that's incredibly likely. You know, if they don't trade up and take a quarterback, you know, their needs, to me, start at corner. You know, they've got to replace Kyle Fuller. He, when you look at their roster right now, there are probably three starting positions that are questionable. One of them is safety, where they haven't brought back Tayshaun Gibson, but they still could. The other is corner, and the third is right tackle, where they did bring back Jermaine Ifedi, and, you know, he has a chance to start for them. So I'd look at those three positions. Safety, you know, if you know the Bears' history, that strong safety position isn't something they've prioritized in recent years. They've cycled through, you know, they let Adrian Amos go, and then Clinton Dix. And now Gibson, you know, if they end up with another cheap veteran, I think they'd be fine with that. But corner, you know, you're really going to need somebody to be here for a long time. And that's probably where they will turn, although I guess I wouldn't rule out wide receiver. I do think the wide receiver class is deep enough, though, that if the Bears could get one in the second round, maybe that's the smarter way to go about that.
I know a lot of people have written, and we're talking with Patrick Finley from the Sun-Times, talking to some Bears. I know a lot of people have written, or at least I've seen it on Twitter and a bunch of other places, that the Bears apparently are shopping one of their wide receivers, Anthony Miller, and apparently they haven't gotten what they're looking for. Do you see him being here at the end, or do you think he's one of the guys that they've seen enough of him and they'd like to move him?
Boy, this really feels like a trade that comes up in the, you know, at the start of the third day of the draft, doesn't it? You know, Anthony Miller for a five or something like
sure.
that. Sure. I don't know. They have been frustrated by him, you know, year in and year out since he got here. You know, remember, this is the guy that they traded up for the draft in the second round. I mean, you need that pick to make a huge impact. And he hasn't. They've been frustrated by his focus. And I mean, my God, if you're looking to get traded, getting in a fight and getting ejected from your playoff game,
that helps. Yeah. Really, that helps.
That's the fast track to do that. And I'm not saying he did it on purpose, but my God, they warned everybody on the team that C.J. Gardner-Johnson was going to try and do to them what he did to Javon Wynn earlier in the season. And you know, wide receiver was such an important position in that playoff game, because they were without Darnell Mooney.
Yeah.
And the kid throws a punch and gets ejected. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what message you're supposed to send if you let him come back, other than, you know, we couldn't get more than a ham sandwich for you, so we decided to let you play out your contract.
Yeah. One other thing you had mentioned, offensive line third, and I've been trying to state a case that the last five or six games of the season last year, when they brought in Sam Mustafa and they brought in, you know, the guys they had there on the offensive line, they seemed to play very well. And then every time I bring it up to someone, they say, but they played terrible teams. And, you know, it's like Ditka used to say, listen, we can only play who's on the schedule. We can only beat who's on the schedule. What was your opinion of the offensive line the last several games? And do you think it's something that can carry through as the season begins this year?
I think both things are true. I think that Sam Mustafa, the love that Sam Mustafa got from his coaches and teammates, I can't tell you the last time I heard a player who was almost universally praised like that. And this is a guy who, you know, does not look good with his shirt off, is not an impressive specimen, but my God, he, you know, was just, you know, was a star on a really star-studded Notre Dame offensive line. And in the leadership that he showed as somebody who, let's face it, had no business walking around like a leader when he took over as an undrafted free agent who never played. And the guy fell in love with him immediately. So I think Sam Mustafa very well, you know, maybe the answer at center. When you talk about the O-line, though, you know, at some point they need to bring in a young tackle. And whether that's this year or next year, it's got to be soon. And part of it is you just don't want to have to pay for it on the open market. It's just too expensive. The Bears are up against it. You know, and if you draft somebody in the first round and, you know, maybe he plays right tackle this year and then you reevaluate Charles Leno in the offseason and you let him go, maybe you can shift him over to the left tackle. You know, that's the argument for it. I think the O-line has a decent amount of depth right now. I think Ryan Pace has put it in a position, you know, where what he likes to do with his position groups is make it so he doesn't absolutely have to draft somebody in order to round out the room. So, you know, this, if the season started tomorrow, the O-line would be okay. I just, you know, don't think that it has a high-end, you know, a player with super high-end talent.
On. Sure.
And, you know, taking 120th overall would give you that sort of prospect. I mean, look around. What, Leno was the seventh-round pick. What, James Daniels was a second-rounder. You know, that's the best pedigree of the group, probably. Cody Whitehair was the second-rounder. So adding a first-round pick to that group, you know, they need to do that at some point. You know, is it this year or next? It's got to be one of the two, probably.
Patrick, appreciate it as always. And listening to you now, I know that me and Xander definitely have something in common with Sam Mustafa because we don't look good with our shirts off either. So,
we should have a club
in that group too.
Okay, there you go. So we all have something in common with Sam Mustafa. We just don't want to tell him.
We're going to have to meet on Wednesday night.
Yes, we will. Appreciate it as always. We'll keep reading your stuff leading up to the draft. It should be fun.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Patrick Finley from the Sun-Times as, yeah, the Bears have a very, very interesting situation going on with the draft coming up. They are number 20. And in Sports Illustrated, they talked about the 10 most interesting people in the 2021 draft. Surprise, surprise, Ryan Pace's name is listed. We will talk about that when we come back. It's Fred and Xander. You want to jump in, talk about some Bears? Do you think they'll go with the offensive lineman? Do you think they'll go with a corner? Do you think they'll move up in the draft and try to find one of those quarterbacks if, in fact, one is available?
Or better yet, will they just draft the best player possible?
Oh, God, please help me. Right here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN underscore Chicago. Now, back to more Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000.
Mark, I just walked down the hall and guess what I saw?
What did you see, Fred?
The sun! The sun is out.
That's nice.
Yeah, you don't see that a lot of that this last couple days.
It's been a couple days. But you know what? This spring has been okay so far.
Yeah, it was 80 a week or so ago, yeah.
And we haven't really seen serious spring rain.
No.
Yet.
No.
I'm sure it's on the way at some point.
It was supposed to rain a lot harder last night than it did by me. I don't know if it rained, but not like super, super hard.
Same.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be in the 50s every day next week.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
That's all right. Yeah. We can live with that.
Yeah, that's not that bad. The draft comes up on April 29th, and no doubt we'll be all over it Thursday, April 29th, and rounds 2 and 3 on Friday, rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday, May 1st, which is also the day of the Kentucky Derby, if I'm not mistaken, the first Saturday in May. But Connor Orr from Sports Illustrated put together a piece that said that talked about the 10 most interesting people in the 2021 draft. And he says the embattled Bears general manager Ryan Pace seems to be standing pat for now. Despite offering a king's ransom for Russell Wilson, Chicago appears content in working with Andy Dalton. Will that remain the same if the board goes haywire on opening night? Could we see Pace try and move up to 4 or maneuver somewhere else in the round to secure some competition for Dalton? Could we see him active early in the second round, attempting to hit on a boomer bust prospect that may not require the same amount of capital? A scenario that makes the most sense to me is what Connor said. I'll maintain that general managers with their backs against the wall are some of the most dangerous and unpredictable actors in the draft.
You think?
Pace, who is still reeling from the Mitchell Trubisky whiff, is no doubt feeling the heat and needs to come out of this stretch of time with a good enough team to compete in the NFC North.
Wait a minute. Is he really feeling the heat, though? You pointed this out before. We want him to feel the heat, but is he really feeling
it? I think he's got to feel it. Not well, see, the thing is, he's getting paid, okay? If he loses his job, like most guys in sports, there's another job somewhere else. He can take a lesser job or something like that, work in a player personnel department or something like that. When general managers, it's not like when you become a general manager, when you leave, there's no other option for you.
No, there are.
You know, there are other options, things in football you can do, and, you know, consultants and things like that. But I do think that's the best line. I maintain that general managers with their backs against the wall are some of the most dangerous and unpredictable characters in the draft.
No doubt.
And the question is, with him, does he move up to try to grab one of these quarterbacks if, in fact, they start to drop a little bit? Does he dare give up a first rounder or a couple of first rounders to move up? Or does he do it in the second round and say, listen, there's a good second round quarterback, and we want to get one of the guys we wanted, and we'll move up in the second round where you don't have to give up nearly as much in order to move up there. The names that Patrick Finley was talking about, Davis Mills from Stanford, 6'4", 22 years old.
And that's who he liked first.
Yeah,
right?
It is. And the thing you have to realize, too, because of the shortened college season and some guys not playing much at all, they haven't gotten the opportunity. He mentioned how Davis Mills started only 11 college games, but then, you know, people always talked about Mitchell Trubisky only starting 13 or whatever. And, you know, you look at it and it's not similar because of COVID and everything else and the way things went. So it's a little bit more different.
It's going to be tricky.
Yeah, it's going to be real tricky.
It does add a wrinkle of a bit of the unknown.
Yeah, and we saw it when they were trying to put together the playoffs and everything in college football last year. Some teams played 6 or 7 games. Some teams played 10 games. Some players didn't get nearly the amount of time they needed in order for them to be looked at and drafted in the following year. But if you're a Bears fan, do you want him taking an offensive lineman? I know how many times have I sat here and listened to people say, they need offensive line. They need offensive line help. I don't know. I don't know if they definitely do or not. Is that the number one need, or is cornerback? Now they have quarterbacks. They have two. They have Foles, and they have Andy Dalton. Are they both going to be there when the season starts? Is Foles going to be on the bench, or are they going to try to move him somewhere along the line? There's so many questions, and I don't know that even if these two guys talk a day or two before the draft, Pace and Nagy, if you're going to get any indication. So that opening night of the draft, when it gets near the Bears' pick, is going to be really interesting.
Well, they're going to have to be ready for many different scenarios. And they're going to have, I guess, somewhat of a plan together.
Yeah.
You would hope. But again, I'm going back to the heat that Pace may feel. We want him to. We don't think, outside looking in, that his job is in trouble.
Well, don't
but
you,
I would hope that he would feel that he wants to.
Don't you think
succeed,
that
though?
When you're in a certain position, that every move you make is being, you know,
scrutinized?
Yeah, every
well,
single
it should
move.
Be.
Yeah, every single move should be scrutinized. You should be graded, I guess you'd say, yep, on every single move that you might make.
But
every
just,
trade, every draft pick.
Right, and you should, but do we really get the sense that that's happening after the press conferences we've seen? It
right.
Seems like they're a bit tone deaf as to, you know, the way we're seeing it, the fans.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know,
I would hope that he is.
They have a tendency to really like their people. They like the people they draft.
So I want a job with the Bears.
Yeah, which is obvious. They like the people they draft. They like the people they hire. They like the people they draft. That's fine. But if they don't do the job, despite how much you like them, you've got to be able to move them.
It's a business.
And get rid of them.
Yes.
And if you don't do that, and if you don't draft or sign players right all the way, then you deserve the criticism you get. And I'm sure that when he took the job, he knew that every pick he made wasn't going to work. Listen, there are still people, when it comes to general managers, there are still people, my hands raised, that will criticize things that Theo Epstein did. Theo Epstein got the Cubs to a World Series. That's great. But some of the other things he made didn't work out.
Right.
He made enough to win one World Series.
Right. You're not going to bat 1,000.
No.
But you do have to have a better batting average than most to keep a job. It certainly helps. Obviously, it helps. And I think they have to take a quarterback. Now, I know that they shouldn't take one just to say we took one.
Right.
But I wouldn't be happy if they left, you know, the draft without really taking a shot at one.
Yeah.
Because Dalton, because Foles.
Right.
I mean, the answer's right there.
Yeah.
But the O-line is important, too. And Patrick was saying that they're more expensive in the open market than it is to draft.
Sure. Sure. You draft when he comes in, especially if you don't if you draft him down further in the first round or a second round guy. My guy, Fat Mike, jumping on in. Mike, what's going on?
Hey.
Oh, good morning, fellas. How's it going? How we doing?
Going well.
All right, so here we go. You cannot go out there and draft a quarterback in the first round here. If you draft a quarterback, who's going to protect him? To move the ball, you got to protect the ball. And to protect the ball, you got to have an O-line. It all starts there, guys. They got to move. They got to move the ball to get points. That's how you win in this league. And you cannot move the football unless you got the horses up front to move the ball. They need O-line. That's where they go. I'm okay with Dalton and Foles. Yeah, none of us here in Chicago are expecting the Bears to make the playoffs or win the Super Bowl next year, correct?
Right.
All right, so why not go out and grab the best, beefiest, fattest old lineman you can to protect that quarterback that you're going to have later on coming up in next year's draft, or a guy in free agency that you can land then? You got to be able to protect the ball, guys. That plain and simple. Plain and simple.
Well, and you would think that, Mike. Oh, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Later.
Getting the offensive lineman to not only protect the quarterback, but to open holes for your running back, to open holes for, you know, David Montgomery, to open holes for, you know, you bring in the running back from Kansas City. So now you have two running backs that can actually, you know, they're finally
pretty important.
They're finally figuring that out with the Bears and the brain trust right up there. And I say that loosely. They're finally figuring out you need two guys to run the back, and you get Tariq Cohen back. Okay. So how are you going to use him? Are you going to use him like you did before? And now, what's the deal with Cordarrelle Patterson? They haven't re-signed him yet, have they?
No.
He's there, or he's out there somewhere. And I know that he changed. It was a big deal. It's always a big deal now when people change their social media and everybody reacts and jumps on stuff like that.
Because they're looking for a storyline.
Right, right. Well, Wilson Contreras changed his before the season started, I think, too. But, anytime Cordarrelle Patterson was put in the backfield, you pretty much knew he was getting the ball. And that was pretty much the same with Tariq Cohen when he was in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You knew he was getting the ball. And for the longest time, my guy that did the pregame show for me, not last year, but the year before that and years before that, Steve McMichael said, listen, and I know Yurko said the same thing. Basically, he's the Yurko would say that Tariq Cohen's a gadget guy. He's going to run gadget plays, going to do this. But what Mongo would always say about Tariq Cohen is put him in the slot, get him the ball, and let him run. Use him as a slot receiver. The Bears had Taylor Gabriel, who just announced his retirement. I know he wasn't still here, but he was here for a while. Taylor Gabriel. Then you have other guys. Put Tariq Cohen in the slot. Get him the ball and let him run because he can get by people. Maybe that's something that if Matt Nagy sits down and figures it out, the best thing for Tariq Cohen is not handing him the ball in the backfield and having him run through that line. He's a small guy. It's tough to do.
You know, and what Fat Mike was saying is, you know, it's got to be O-line first. Okay, so say it is. Can we still get out of the draft in a lower round with a quarterback that would maybe be worth it? Do we have the right people assessing the talent to be able to make something of that.
Well, that's been a question for a while. Is it the right people? It's tough when your starting tackle is a guy you took in the seventh round. That means people passed on him. Everybody passed on him six times, and he's a guy that was still available. Now, I have to hand it to Charles Leno. He made himself a starting tackle in the NFL, but he's not. He plays sometimes like a seventh-round pick. He doesn't play like a third-round pick or a fourth-round pick, so how much criticism can you give him?
Right.
I guess you can criticize him a lot because he's supposed to do better, but he also is not a first or second or third
or
fourth-round
pick. But again, he went when he went.
Yeah, for a reason.
Right.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. You want to jump in, talk some more Bears as they got the draft coming up in a couple of weeks. Don't forget, we're here for another hour because an hour from now, it'll be a White Sox pregame show with Connor McKnight. The White Sox taking on the Royals today after the rainout yesterday, so they've had 2 days off.
There's sunshine.
Yep. Tony La Russa said some things about the catching and what he was going to do and how the rain delay messed that up a little bit. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk. I went to a restaurant the other day that's owned by an athlete, former athlete, now broadcaster. I wanted to ask you about restaurants you've gone to and maybe the best one that you went to that was owners. It could be a Ditka's. It could be McMahon's place. It could be something like that. We'll talk about that and more. Fred and Xander here on ESPN 1000.
Fred and Xander
on ESPN 1000. Also available on demand on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
Mark, have you ever, being a rock and roll guy, have you ever gone to a bar or a restaurant because a musician owned it or it was named after a musician or things like that? There's a great one in Arizona, which you have to go to if you get a chance.
It's got to be Alice Cooper's place, right?
Yeah, it's called Cooperstown.
Yeah.
And it's great because you walk in, it's basically my love. It's sports and music. And you see autographs from baseball players, and then all of a sudden you see,
one of his costumes or something, or one of the props that he uses on stage.
But then you'll also see guitar, Metallica's guitar, a guitar from there. So the whole place is music and sports. It's like heaven. I walked in there and said, this is awesome.
I didn't know it had a sports angle.
Yes.
That's smart.
Oh, they've got a hot dog there called the Big Unit. And Randy Johnson for a while when he was in Arizona, I think he was part owners of it with Alice Cooper.
That would make sense.
And the hot dog is a 21-inch hot dog. And I actually, the first time I saw it might have been on Man vs. Food. And he was there and he had the 21-inch hot dog with all the fixings. And I'm saying to myself, okay, as a kid growing up, I would have popped two or three hot dogs in a microwave and just eat a couple. Well, a 21-foot, I said foot, right? 21-inch. 21-inch hot dog.
Yeah, 21 feet.
21-inch hot dog. A 21-inch hot dog is just like 3 7-inch hot dogs. So it's like, that's no big deal. So I went there and I had that.
All the fixings, too?
As many as I liked. I didn't want to get fixings I didn't like.
Right.
But then I ate that. That's not a big deal. It's just like, that's a nice lunch.
Right.
But that's one of my favorite places. But I went to a place the other day on Friday. I went to a local place in Lockport, and Ron Coomer owns it, called Coom's Corner.
Oh.
And it's right in Lockport, right on 159th, which is 7 out there in Lockport. And I want to, I've been to others. I went to Jim McMahon's restaurant back in the day. I was, obviously, I've gone to Ditka's and things like that. So many times, athletes' restaurants don't make it. They're there for a while. I don't know why athletes think they should get into the
restaurant business. I could be wrong about this, but it seems that the way this happens is that you have a restaurateur that approaches an athlete,
right,
and says, "We'll give you a piece of it for your likeness and all this kind of stuff, and you're part owner." And so it's not like Walter Payton said, "I'm going to start a." I mean, at least as far as I'm
right. Well, sometimes it goes both ways, because I know Steve McMichael's got Mongo's over in Romeoville, right off of, it's just south of 53.
It's still there.
And it's there. Yeah, I go there for my fantasy drafts. I met Fat Mike, our previous caller. I met him out there a couple times.
Flipping burgers?
No, he's been there in the past, though. It's like they have the like Mongo's Hall of Fame, the footballs and jerseys from when he was Texas and in the NFL and things like that. And then he would, when he was doing pregames with us, he would leave here after the pregame and meet a former Bear out there, and the people would pack, you know, the restaurant at Mongo's.
But he wasn't day to day. He was just kind of.
And I think most guys are smart. They have their name put on it.
Yep.
They don't worry about taking much of a loss. They can only make a profit on it.
Yeah.
Which is a good way of doing it.
Which I think is really the dynamic. And right. A lot of times, you don't know why restaurants go out.
Yeah.
They go out of business for many reasons.
Sometimes
an athlete is at their apex,
yeah,
and it attracts a lot of people, and then it just kind of dies down, and maybe that star power isn't there, and maybe that's why.
Or a guy gets traded.
Or somebody gets traded.
What was the name of Madden's restaurant?
Ben's Post, yeah.
Yeah, and he was there for what? He opened it, and he was there for, was it there for a year before he left?
Probably there like a year or two, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't there very long.
No.
Right. I've been to Chelly's way back in the day.
Chelly's was great, yeah.
On Madison. Uh-huh. I went to Walter Payton's Roundhouse in Aurora.
Which is
the
awesome.
Old train station.
Now it's owned by Two Brothers Brewing.
Right.
It's a great place.
Ditka's did that.
Now that they closed the Ditka's down here, the one in Oakbrook is still open. I think it's the only one, but that's a great one too. Right. Really good. And I know the station here used to do shows when we had Ditka on a weekly basis. They would do shows from the Ditka's restaurants.
And Peyton's America's Bar. Remember that was downtown here?
Uh-huh.
That was a long time
ago. It's very cool. Coombs Corner is a place I'd always heard of because I'd heard Coomer talk about it and Pat Hughes talk about it on the radio calls and things like that. So I was out in Lockport the other day and I said, you know what, let's just go to Coombs Corner. And I had no idea what to expect. And it's a sports bar, TVs everywhere. They had the Masters on everywhere. They had a good beer selection. They had
a lot of Cubs stuff.
There was a lot of Cubs, a lot of pictures of Coomer and some other people.
Mm-hmm.
But then they had a 17-inch pizza. And you think pizza is like, okay, it was like a pizza flatbread. And you're a guy that looks like you could probably enjoy your pizza. Okay?
Thanks, Fred.
It was a 17-inch pizza,
yeah,
and it was like wafer thin, the crust, which made
like
it great. Which made it great because then you could eat more. Because that's what fills you up is the
Wait a minute.
What did I have on the pizza?
Well, first of all, I was going to point out, I think they call that St. Louis-style pizza. When I first tripped on this, first of all, wait, St. Louis has a style of pizza?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I know
there's Detroit. Detroit's the square stuff.
And this is back early 90s at Big Al's in Peoria.
Okay.
Went to Big Al's.
I've been to Big Al's before.
Big Al's in Peoria, famous place.
I was at the Big Al's before they moved it to where it is now.
Well, I've been to both.
Okay.
But I was at the old school one, and right downtown we went to have pizza. And we had this St. Louis style pizza.
Uh-huh.
It was the worst ever. And it was like that cracker thin. Now, I'm sure that what you had at Coombs Corner
was awesome.
Was probably really, really good.
Yeah.
I don't know if they know what they're doing in Peoria. Sorry. So now I'm going to get a bunch of cards and letters from Peoria residents. But that was my first experience. So I'm sure yours was better and I should try that.
It was a pizza or a flatbread. I can't remember how it was listed on the menu. But when it came, I looked, I go, this is great because this is thin crust. And we got sausage, mushroom, and onions. And the mushrooms were cut thick, not just like little small little slices. And a lot of onions and the sausage was awesome.
Yeah. All right, so Mr. Food, how many stars do you give it?
Out of how many?
Five.
I give it a good 4.5.
Wow.
It was awesome. It was so good. We were going to leave some, but what's the point?
Well, what's the point? I mean, if you could do it.
Cracker thin crust.
Cracker thin.
Yeah.
Right.
It was very, very good.
A thicker crust will slow you down a bit.
Oh, there's no doubt. I love Salerno's. They sell it at Hodgkin's at the OTB.
Oh, I love Salerno's.
On 16th Street in Cicero.
One, yeah. Is that in Berwyn, the original?
Yeah, in Berwyn on 16th Street. Oh, you're right. Berwyn, not Cicero. On 16th Street. It was my favorite. And then they had one right near McNeil Hospital. But now they have one out in Hodgkin's where the OTB is.
And I've been to that one, too.
Yeah, and the same family, or parts of the family, own one in Lyle called Aviva, E-V-V-I-V-A, and same pizza. And it's like, oh, love it. It's great. But the crust is a little thicker, cuts down on how much you can have of it.
Yep.
But Yeah, you never know what to go. You know, is the restaurant good because it's named after a guy? He's still got to make good food.
And
good beer.
You would hope that it is good because whoever's putting their name on it.
Right.
I went to Frank Thomas's.
Yeah.
That's in Burwood.
It was.
Is that gone?
Yeah.
No? On the corner? It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Big place.
Well, it was a bank.
It was an old bank right there on 22nd and Oak Park.
Yeah, it was right there. So there are a lot of different ones, but if you've not been to Coombs Corner, and me as a White Sox fan, I didn't have any Sox garb on, but I think they would have let me in. And the servers
were great.
I'm sure
they're not turning down the green.
The servers were great.
Yeah.
And it was very, very nice. We had a wonderful lunch.
Smaller place?
No, bigger than I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, great TV location. The bar was there. Kind of a nice rectangular bar with TVs up there, and you could see them from wherever you're
at. Downtown Lockport's really cool.
It is.
I love those little towns. They're everywhere.
Yeah, they've just opened up within the last year. They've opened up two breweries in downtown Lockport. Nick and Ivy is one, and then Lock and Mule is run by a brewery called Tangled Root, and that's right across the street. And so there's a ton of great places there in downtown Lockport, which I will be attending more often because I'm actually building a house out there, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
Breaking the news here.
Yeah.
Going south.
Well, yeah, if people saw my Facebook, they probably could have read about it. But, yeah, going a little bit further south to Lockport. So I'm just trying to – so maybe Coombs will give me a discount. That's why I did 15 minutes, so I get a discount at Coombs Corner.
Well, I was part of it. I want to taste this pizza.
It's great. Okay. It's really good. And anybody that's been down there, if you want to jump on in and agree with me or disagree with me, if you liked it or you think it's not good, 312-332-3776.
Or if you have a recommended place that is, athlete associated.
Athlete driven, yeah. They don't have it as much as they used to. Think about it. There's no one on the Hawks or the Bulls that are currently playing right now.
No, you're right. It seems to be something that was much more popular, that concept.
Yeah. Joe Madden started this place figuring he'd be around for a while.
You almost have to talk to your agent and say, how long do you think I'll be here?
How long will I be here? I just signed a contract.
Can I
stick around?
Can I get an out?
Yeah. 312-332-3776. We're here till 12:30. Also want to talk about some Major League Baseball salaries. Mark wants to call out a member of the White Sox, right? And I want to talk about Tony La Russa talking today about his catchers because he had a whole plan, and yesterday's rainout kind of changed that a little bit. So we'll get into that. You want to talk Cub baseball. They're getting ready to start in about 15 minutes as the Cubs take on the Pirates, trying to get the rubber game of that three-game series. So we'll talk some baseball. 312-332-3776. You can also see us on twitch.tv. I go to ESPN 1000 Chicago. Check out Mark's cool hat. And today they are wearing their throwback uniforms, or basically just Tony La Russa's old one, you know. So we'll talk about that more after this on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Fred and Xander. This is Chicago's home for sports.
Live stream ESPN 1000, or take a listen to our other shows on demand. It's the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
So there will be baseball on the south side as the White Sox are taking on the Royals today. It's funny because I was very critical of Jorge Soler. And then when the Cubs made the trade, got Wade Davis back, I thought that was a good deal for the Cubs, Wade Davis. And then you look and Soler has finally figured out how to hustle maybe a little bit more and how to hit. And he's hitting the crap out of the ball the last year or so for the Kansas City Royals. But, he'll be going against the White Sox today. Hopefully he does not put one out of the yard against Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease still has stuff to prove to me because Dane Dunning pitched the other day, and I was following Dane Dunning.
How'd he do?
He went five innings, gave up, I think, one run, struck out six, and was, like, tremendous.
Better than Cease's first game.
Yeah, much better.
It's interesting you bring that up because there have been a whole bunch of positivity coming out of the CAC this league, right, about Dylan? And you've been very vocal about this. And as soon as I watched that first game, all I'm hearing is Fred's voice in my head going, I don't know. And it's like, what happened?
And people always say, well, he has that one bad inning. Yeah, but you can't have it in the first. You can't have a bad inning in the first. Zach Davies had one bad inning yesterday.
He is
second,
an incredibly slow starter.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, hopefully that first game was an outlier, but yeah, I heard it in my head.
Yeah.
I heard it in my head.
It was sad. Here's the lineup for today's game. And don't forget, 12:30, you'll get Connor McKnight as he will have the pregame show leading up to White Sox baseball. It is so nice to hear Len Casper. I have not listened to the TV broadcast of a White Sox game all season long. Len Casper, DJ, I sync up my Amazon Alexa with the TV. It's awesome.
Well,
it is so
good. Thankfully, they're on our team. Uh-huh. Otherwise, you'd be promoting them somewhere else so much.
No, they're on our team.
Yeah. So this all works out. This works to your favor.
It definitely works to my favor. Here's the lineup. You have Lurie Garcia in right field. Luis Robert hitting second in center field. Abreu at first. Moncada at cleanup. Hitting fourth at third base. Yermín Mercedes is your DH hitting fifth. Then you have Vaughn in left field, Andrew Vaughn, Zach Collins catching, Madrigal at second base, and Danny Mendick at short as Tim Anderson's still out.
Danny's been hitting.
Yeah, well, we got to get some things going. Madrigal's got to learn to he's got to learn to field the ball. He's got to learn to be good on the bases, and he's got to figure some things out. Because I like Madrigal. I know a lot of people. Cap was talking about him the other day. We like him. When you like a guy, he's actually got to be able to figure things out.
Yeah,
and
there's some learning on the job that some of this we think should have been, learned. He played last year.
Yeah. Well, there was a ground ball in the game the other day. I think it might have been the Lance Lynn game. It might have been in the opener. Ground ball to second base, and he juggled it four times before he flipped it over to second. And instead of getting the double play, they only got a force out. And it's like, okay, you got to be better than that. It was an easy play. And hopefully he will be better than that and be better than it soon. I mentioned that Zach Collins is catching today. And Tony La Russa said he had different plans for today's game, but the rainout kind of changed things.
Well, we had a plan for the weekend of Zach yesterday, and then Carlos pitching again to Yaz. They had such a great game in Seattle. Once you got rained out, we spent some half hour in there thinking about follow the plan, push it back. You know, what do we do with our rotation? And we ended up, one of the good things about it, we got Cleveland coming up, and Yaz will catch the majority of the Cleveland games. He was ready to catch today. I don't think he's real happy not playing. Had a meeting, had 2 days off, and he would like to be in there. But we got four games with Cleveland coming up, so days off once in a while, like after the off day was a great one. Yesterday was not well received. We wish we were playing, especially when you got a thing lined up. You got to be flexible, and we go at it today, but we'll catch up.
Over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I liked that Tony La Russa the other day took the blame for the loss in Seattle when Matt Foster was in. He gave up the runs and stuff like that.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit it did. But it was nice to see.
We're seeing a different Tony, aren't we?
Yeah, just a little bit. And, he's making adjustments. He seems to be very, very team-oriented. Well, the White Sox take the field today. It's Sunday, so they'll be wearing the 1983 jerseys, one that Tony La Russa is familiar with.
It's a fun one. And as soon as I saw it, I wasn't paying attention to Sunday till I got here. And then I saw a different one and I got it on now and some great memories. Just wondering if make sure we resurrect it. Na-na-na-na, cause that was almost so much a part of 83. But I remember when we first brought these uniforms on, there was some question about how good they looked. And I remember a bunch of us said, the better we play, the better they look. So it was a real good-looking uniform in 83. So hopefully it's a good-looking uniform today.
Did you see, real quick, he mentioned the steam song, Na Na Hey Hey Goodbye. Another good funeral song, by the way, nobody mentioned.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, you got to have a good sense of humor if you're doing that. That was part of a Nancy Faust 9-minute documentary from ESPN. Did you see it?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I heard about it, but I didn't see it.
Really, really awesome. Actually, I remember that from the summer of 77. That's when she started it.
Uh-huh.
My aunt and uncle had season tickets right below the organ. I met her many, many times.
She's great.
And she started that year, and I seem to remember when that whole thing started. And you mentioned in 83, but it's become this phenomenon.
Oh, it's used everywhere.
She got an old gold record for it. I mean, it's funny he mentioned that because that would be a good funeral song, one of the polls we have up.
Yeah.
At ESPN on
it's used everywhere. Twitter. So, I mean, it's a great one. And it was perfect, too, when you're beating another team and they go to the bullpen and all of a sudden the pitcher leaves. And you
say goodbye to the pitcher.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they can do that again today. And he's right. I didn't like these uniforms. But as Tony La Russa said, the better you play, the better they look. And when the White Sox went to the playoffs in 83,
they looked all right.
They looked really good.
Yeah.
When you don't win, the ones with the E, it looked like an E on the hat instead of a C.
Didn't like those.
No, didn't like those at all. They didn't win with those. 312-332-3776. Something that also I wanted to talk about. Sports Weekly talked about the MLB salaries. I want to get into that. Some of the rules, the 7 innings games, the runner at second, and replay. There was a replay in the Cub game yesterday. Blew my mind. I can't believe they can't get this rule straight yet. We'll talk about that and more. Jump on in. We're here until 12:30 on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. You're listening to Fred and Xander.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Hopefully they can play this song later on today after the White Sox destroy the Royals.
Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
And I wasn't kind of, I mean, you didn't, Tyler, you didn't come up with that on your own, did you? That
just it's played, rejoined right? roulette here.
Yeah.
You never know what's coming out.
See, we're just lucky that
every
way.
Once in a while.
We're just lucky.
Every once in a while, things just happen. I called him Connor. Connor will be coming up in a half hour.
Take that as a compliment, by the way.
He also grew about 4 inches, at least.
At least, yeah.
He's a tall man. It's funny, because I'm the same height as he is, and everybody's talking, man, he's really tall. No, you guys are all just midgets. I'm sorry, can I say that? You're challenged? What's the proper word? Proper phrase?
Well, let's see, horizontally challenged?
I guess. You guys are all just short. Again, now that the microphones are here, I can
actually remember that Randy Newman song?
Yeah. I do. It's a good one. Short people. Got no reason. But anyway, now that the microphones move, Cap can actually stand up. And everything works perfect for him and for us. We were talking about the White Sox, and you wanted to get into something. And I, of course, as I always do, I talk too long. So what do you want to get into with the White Sox?
It must have been the first game against Seattle. Maybe it was a day or two removed from Luis Robert taking the ball to the head.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to pick on the little gnat, according to Liam Hendricks. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Adam Eaton.
Oh, that's what I thought you were.
The little gnat.
I didn't know this.
That's how he characterized him. It's an article, Vinny Duber, back in January, about how he's happy this little gnat plays for us now because he would just fall off. I know he's a tough out at the plate. But I saw something, and I'm wondering if you noticed it too. There was a high fly to center field.
Uh-huh.
Luis Robert is the captain of the outfield. He's right there.
Uh-huh.
And the little gnat came and caught it right from him. And the way it looked, Robert definitely called it. It was his ball.
I don't know if he called it or not. I know what you're talking about.
Okay,
because it was a very last second thing. He reached his glove out.
And this is what I'm saying. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just really noticed that. I can't say I'm a huge Adam Eaton fan.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that's why I noticed it. But I really thought, wait a minute. Did he do what I think he just did? I mean, that's Luis Robert, the captain of the outfield. It's your center fielder. He's the traffic director.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
So you did notice that,
on the broadcast, they had mentioned on the broadcast, because, again, I was listening to the home team call. I was listening to Len Casper and Darren Jackson, because on TV, they were probably talking about a kid eating cotton candy in the third row. So they weren't talking about that.
Len and DJ on ESPN 1000.
Yes, on ESPN 1000. So they had mentioned that it apparently, because Darren Jackson played outfield. He was a very good outfielder. He knows what to do in the outfield. And he said it appears that nobody called that ball. So Eaton, not hearing Luis Robert say anything, figured, I better take this, because I'm not sure Luis Robert knows that I'm going to go after it. And he caught the ball. So it was nice to hear, because Len Casper and DJ broke it down.
Well, allegedly, They don't know if he didn't call.
No, we don't. We don't know. But I saw that because he reached in front of him and took it.
He's like, wait a minute.
I know.
Like he picked his pocket.
Well, that's why. I don't think that he would do that if Robert called for the ball.
And I would hope that wouldn't be the case. But all of a sudden I flashed through, oh, you think this guy's going to get one to the head again, so you're going to save the day. Well, he's the center fielder.
He has gotten him to the head before, you know. And I can't wait. Oh, by the way, well, let's see. Today is the 11th. Oh, I got some time still because MLB The Show doesn't come out till the 20th, 4/20, which is weird. Why is it? Usually it comes out before the opening.
February.
Thing. Yeah.
It comes out during spring training.
I know. I don't know what the delay was this year.
4/20 is a very popular day.
I know it is.
It might have something to do with the fact that it's also on Xbox.
Yeah.
I don't know about that for sure, but that could be something.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, MLB The Show is the video game that PlayStation has had, but this is the first year that it's also coming out on Xbox. Xbox used to have another base. Was
they used to have MLB 2K.
Okay. Mm-hmm. MLB 2K. Now the MLB The Show is going to be on both PlayStation and on Xbox, and that's the game I played last year where Eloy Jimenez suffered a fractured skull in the opener by missing a fly ball and having it bounce off his head. So, you know, hopefully that never happens again. It would be nice to see Eloy Jimenez play someday soon.
Maybe August?
Yeah.
Maybe in the upper 80s?
Someone brought up an interesting point. It probably was on Twitter, but they said, think about it. If it wasn't for Eloy getting hurt, your mean Mercedes probably doesn't make the team. Because they were going to go with Andrew Vaughn as their DH. Mercedes may not have made the team if Eloy got hurt.
Wasn't he on the starting roster for the season? I thought he was. Mendick was brought back. I thought Mercedes had made it. He would not have gotten
saying is Eloy got hurt, okay?
Right.
You know what I mean? Wouldn't have been. Eloy got hurt in spring training.
Oh, You're right. Okay, I get.
Eli got hurt in spring training.
Okay,
so if he doesn't get hurt,
Andrew
Vaughn's not in left field. Eloy's in left field. Andrew Vaughn's your DH. Right. There was no reason for your mean Mercedes to be out making the team.
I forgot it was cactus play.
Right, you're not going to keep three catchers and Andrew Vaughn as a DH. Like right now, your mean Mercedes is DHing. Andrew Vaughn doesn't get as many opportunities. Now today he's out, and when Adam Engel comes back. Now you got another outfielder. You got to figure out how to get in there. And I know Connor McKnight was talking about it on White Sox Weekly yesterday. It's not a bad problem to have. Not a bad problem for the management to have. Bad problem for Andrew Vaughn to have because
he needs those at bats.
Well, he's when Adam Engel comes back, he's a better outfielder. And if you can have Luis Robert in center and Adam Engel in one of the outfield spots with Adam Eaton in the other. You're going to have Andrew Vaughn be your DH. And the way that your mean Mercedes is hitting, you're not going to take him out of the lineup.
And you said he's a better outfielder. Arguably, he may be a better hitter since what we've seen of him recently.
Right. Adam Engel hit 295 last year.
Yeah, last year he was great. This year he looked good, too.
Yeah. I'm looking in the at Sports Weekly. If you want to jump on in and talk some White Sox baseball or Cub baseball, the Cubs are just underway and they have a man on. So that's a good sign. The Sports Weekly came up with the payrolls for this year. And this is the first year in a while that the White Sox payroll is higher than the Cubs payroll. The White Sox payroll, opening day payroll, $144,825,000. The Cubs, $130 million. So $14 million less than the White Sox. You've got the Dodgers on top, followed by the Mets, the Yankees, the Angels. So in the top four, you've got Los Angeles and New York.
Markets 1 and 2.
Yeah, markets 1 and 2 with Washington, Houston, San Diego, and Philadelphia following. The bottom payrolls, Pittsburgh, $45 million, Cleveland, $49 million, Baltimore, $54 million, Miami, $57 million, and fifth from the bottom is Tampa Bay at $64 million. People forget Tampa Bay was in the World Series.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. What they've been able to do with bad teams. Now, I'm looking here. It's a great article written by Bob Nightingale talking about a lot of things. The highest-paid player continues to be the game's best, Mike Trout. He'll earn $37.116 million. Rounding out the top five, Garrett Cole, Nolan Arenado, Max Scherzer, and Manny Machado. There was something I wanted to make sure I brought up here. The Orioles have only six players earning more than $1 million. Baltimore does. Only six. making more than that.
Really?
Yeah. The Pirates' payroll this
year. How do you do that in this day and age? Pretty hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, see.
And they're not good, but they did sweep Boston. They did sweep Boston.
I know.
At Fenway to open up the season.
There's a lot of guys out there, a lot of players who you figure they're making less money. They got to try and prove themselves. And the Pirates' payroll.
You may be onto something.
Pirates' payroll this year, the lowest by any club since the Astros, $22 million, when they lost 111 games. Just 20 years ago, 13 teams were within $30 million of the Yankees. Two others, the Red Sox and the Dodgers, were within $1 million. Today, no one is within $30 million of the Dodgers. No one. The Dodgers' payroll, $234 million. The Mets is $204. So,
And the Mets really went nuts this year.
Yeah. In other sports, boy, so many people are going to hate me when I say this, more than they usually do. I keep piling them on. I kind of like when you have to spend. I like salary caps because you don't have everyone spending the most money. Now, people are going to say, well, look, you just mentioned Tampa Bay has the fifth lowest payroll, but they were in the World Series last year. Understandable. But the other teams that are below, they have no chance of getting to a World Series. They have no chance of making the playoffs.
Right, and what Tampa Bay did isn't easily attainable.
No, they've done it for a while, though. I mean, Tampa Bay's been a team that gets to the postseason.
Right, but I'm saying you can't necessarily replicate that with other teams.
No, well, I guess if you have good scouting and you draft well.
Right, and there are a lot of things that come into it, too.
I was going to say, the Marlins were in the playoffs also, beat the Cubs.
Yeah. But think about some of the teams that won World Series for them. What was it, 97 and then 03? I mean, those were teams that they were picking guys up the scrap heap. But
well, they did spend money, though.
And they spent a little bit, but then they offloaded it.
They offloaded
everybody. That's what they always do.
Yeah.
It's that perpetual cycle. I mean, we saw it. I mean, think about Giancarlo Stanton. They paid him.
Right.
They gave him the big contract, but then they traded him.
You look at who the people that were on that team. You know, Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich was there.
Wasn't D. Gordon on that team?
D. Gordon was on the team.
Obviously, Jose Fernandez.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing in baseball. But my biggest thing, and it's because I'm a soccer fan. I know Steve Cashel called me out for how much I love soccer. I've always thought that you should take Major League Baseball and have two leagues. The higher ups, the teams are going to spend the money, the better teams, and then the lower teams. And at the end of the year.
You want to do that before a salary cap?
See, the salary cap, they're so far beyond. You got one team spending, again, the top and bottom, Dodgers, $234 million, Pittsburgh, $45
million. How do you find median?
How do you start? Right. It's like too far gone for you to do it. But in the NFL and the NBAs, I don't understand. And Tyler, you're probably a lot better than this. The NBA salary cap is like the hardest thing. It would probably be, if it was a class in school, it would be like the highest level class. I mean, because you have bird exemptions, you have all these other exemptions.
And it feels
like
there's a new one every single year that comes out that apparently has been in place for years. But
yeah. And look what the Brooklyn Nets have.
But it has simplified a little. I mean, it is a little bit similar because there is the luxury tax, which,
in baseball.
In baseball, but also
the
in
Dodgers
basketball.
Don't mind paying for it.
Yeah, it depends. Do you have an owner who's willing to fork over that cash?
In order to be a winning team.
Well, baseball's always been like that, with the exception of Tampa Bay and a few others.
Yeah.
You know, the more you spend. I mean, the Yankees did that for years.
Yeah, usually the more you spend, the better team you're going to have. And a lot of times it just doesn't play out well. It would be so cool, and soccer fans and other people have talked about it for years. And the NBA, the way the NBA is going, how they're just building super teams, it would be perfect for the NBA too. You split the league in two. You have the good teams and the lesser teams. And at the end of the year, the lesser teams, the bottom two or three lesser teams get sent down to the lower league. And you got to fight to get back up.
How is that going to work for broadcast rights and advertisers? There's a lot of
unfortunately, it can never work. But in soccer around the world, every game throughout the season is important because you need to stay out of that bottom three in order to stay and keep the big money.
Okay, so the dynamic would be comparable to say, okay, the Blackhawks didn't do very well. You're going down to Rockford.
Yeah.
And now you're the Ice Hogs until you could prove that you could be back in the NHL.
Very similar.
Wow.
Yeah. Very similar.
Wow.
Like I said, it's a pipe dream. If they wanted to start sports all over again, it would be a great way to start it.
That's a way to erase everything.
Yeah.
Just
For the longest time, when the White Sox and Cubs weren't winning, we would have been all for erasing everything and starting from scratch. Yep. We come back. We'll take a look at our polls and how the results have gone. And we will also wrap things up, get you ready for White Sox pregame show as the White Sox and the Royals go at it. They have the pregame show with Connor McKnight coming up in just 15 minutes here on ESPN 1000.
This is Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000, also available on demand. On the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
So, the Masters wraps up today. I'll find out about it on the news tonight. Or maybe someone will post it on my...
You'll see it on social media.
Maybe, yeah. Don't you hate when you like record something or the game's a little bit, you know, your broadcast on whatever you're watching is a little behind and all of a sudden your phone says,
I've told you,
hey, three run homer.
Happens like, every time crap. With my phone.
Yeah.
Every game, every White Sox game, I have to put the phone in another room because I will grab it.
Yeah.
Out of habit.
I know. It's a shame. Hey, what do you know? Trevor Williams gets out of a jam. He had a couple runners on and pitches out of it. Cubs and Pirates are scoreless going to the top of the second inning. We got White Sox baseball coming up in a few moments. So, but let's get to the results of our poll questions. Want to do the rock poll first?
Yeah, we'll do the rock poll first. Eric Bloom of Blue Oyster Cult in an interview was asked. Of course, they were the ones to... create the song Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yes.
Which you have at your fingertips there. Yeah, that song.
You know it. Very familiar.
Yeah, the cowbell song.
Uh-huh.
More cowbell song. Well, anyway, he was asked what if that song would be played at his funeral. He said, no, thank you. And then we just thought, you know, there's got to be a list of songs that are popular for funerals. And there are. So we put them up on the poll. And you had a choice out of Stairway to Heaven. Another one, Bites the Dust, Knocking on Heaven's Door, or that one, Don't Fear the Reaper. Yours was...
Mine was Freddy's Dead.
Freddy's Dead. That's your walk-up song.
That's my walk-up song, and then If I Died Today by Tim McGraw would have been the...
And my walk-up was Cashmere, nice, dramatic, uh-huh. And then the version of My Way from the Sex Pistols.
Yes.
Awesome.
Uh-huh. I hadn't heard that. That's the first time I heard that version. I may or may not put it on. And how did the poll come out?
So the poll, pretty convincing favorite. We've got Knocking on Heaven's Door at about 36%, Stairway to Heaven 26%, Don't Fear the Reaper at about 19.5%, and another one, Bites the Dust, at 18%.
Nobody has a sense of humor.
No.
Jeez. How about Na Na Hey Hey Goodbye?
That's a good
Same
one.
Same thing.
We could have done that. This is the one that Yurko played, the Warren Zevon song, and I think the first line or two hopefully was in here.
Shadows are falling. And I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while.
Okay, it's an awesome song. Warren Zevon, when he knew he was passing away and knew he was dying from cancer, and he wrote that song.
He basically did a goodbye media tour with an album saying goodbye.
Absolutely amazing. So Yurko with a good call on that one. The other poll, which is a silly poll, I'm looking for a car, and I realized that when they heat the steering wheel, they only heat it at 10 and 2 and 9 and 3. So I was asking, when you drive, how do you drive? Do you drive the old standard, the way you're taught at 10 and 2 or 9 and 3? I have my hand on the top of the wheel, and some people drive with their hand down below on the bottom of the
wheel. Well, you move it around, but that's the best.
Yeah. Well, because it's easier to change, you know.
Sure.
Hit the
so
dial.
Your left hand.
Yes, left hand on top of the wheel.
Okay. Yeah.
I never drive with my right hand and I never drive with my arm out the window.
Oh, I do.
Do you?
Sure.
I don't ever.
Farmer's tan?
Yeah. I don't ever do that.
I saw someone driving the other day, phone texting outside the window.
Taking a picture.
They could have. It was clearly a text because you could see the thumb moving.
Yeah,
that's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
That's pretty bad. What do most people say they do?
So most people say 46.5%. Indeed, on top. They're on top of the steering wheel.
Okay.
Then you got about 33% on the bottom of the steering wheel.
Nobody drives the way they're taught.
11% at 9 and 3, and then 9% at 10 and 2.
9%. 10 and 2 has been taught for years.
Yes. Yeah.
We're all rebels.
They always tell you, they go, come on, 9 and 2. Or 10 and 2. 10 and 2. And yeah, I do that if there's bad traffic or I see somebody slamming the brakes on.
Sure.
Then I grab.
That's
it that
your
way.
Extra attention grab.
Yes, it is. And if somebody's cutting in front of me or if it's raining real bad mm-hmm. and it's a little slick, I'm not going to just be driving casually.
You got to save that move for when it really matters. Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't matter so much.
No, it doesn't. It's just cruising down the road. So the Bulls play tonight. They're taking on Minnesota. And I also found out, we didn't even talk about this, but Minnesota, the Timberwolves are about to be bought. Alex Rodriguez and millionaire Mark Lohr finalizing a deal to buy the Timberwolves, reportedly a deal worth $1.5 billion.
So you got an old baseball guy getting into basketball, and you've got a basketball guy getting into baseball in Boston. LeBron.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then
interesting.
A little note I saw in the paper today. Wilson Contreras goes deep. Is that Wilson Contreras?
That's Baez.
Baez? Javi? Must have been a low pitch. Vanderbilt guard Scottie Pippen Jr., obviously the son of longtime Bulls star, said on social media he will make himself available for the NBA draft but won't hire an agent. Smart, very smart. He averaged 20.8 points and 4.8 assists as a sophomore with Vanderbilt. You think he'll get drafted first round?
Probably not a first rounder.
Okay.
But he's good.
Well,
he was really good with Vanderbilt. It was kind of empty calories because Vanderbilt is a very bad team, historically not a great program, but he's a really good player. Like, so he can hoop.
You think he's doing the smart thing, though, not hiring an agent?
Yeah, no, that's the smart course. I mean, you're going to see so many guys do this, and it's been a thing now for a while, but that's the smart thing. Why not? You're getting free feedback
right.
from NBA-level scouts. Well, why wouldn't you do this if you're a fringe prospect?
Yeah. I mean, 20.8 points is good, but like you were just saying, someone had to score on the team, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Ron Harper's kid is playing where?
He was at Rutgers, but he I believe, has entered his name into the draft.
Okay.
You know, as far as Pippen's kid goes, as long as he doesn't negotiate something and then cry about it later on. I had to. Sorry.
The Bulls draft him. Well, they're not going to give you what you want. They're going to find another superstar and pay him the big money and not give you exactly what you want.
Combine's going to F up his summer, too.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. I will never, ever forgive, not that anybody cares, I will never forgive him for waiting and having a surgery, like, instead of when the season started, you know, when the season ended, having surgery, waiting till the season was, you know, a month or two away, then having surgery.
There were so many signs, right? There were so many signs over those years.
Yeah. But you know what? They won six championships, so we can't complain about
too
much. Yeah, can't complain about too much there. So.
Week from tomorrow is going to be the year anniversary of when this was released. The Last Dance.
Last Dance.
Oh, is it really?
Well, think about it. Last year,
April 19th.
You know, everything got shut down, and that was the must-watch for everybody.
Have you watched it again? Have you watched any of it again?
No, but I always tell myself I will. And I know I will at some point.
It'll be on Netflix forever. You have the
probably.
You have the flexibility to do it whenever. Winter would have been the good time. There's nothing else to do.
No, but there's so much other good stuff on.
And that is
so
true.
Much other good stuff.
And that's why The Last Dance really was, you know, so front and center for everybody because sports was peeled back,
right?
And everything was shut down.
Yeah, we had not much to do. So, yeah.
And they moved up the start date. They were going to release it last summer.
Yeah. And I really wish they would have, because they released, they did two episodes a week. I wish they would have stuck with it and done just one.
1 hour.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that.
No. Make it, draw it out a little bit. We had time. As it turned out, we had plenty of time. Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of time to do anything else, so we had plenty of time to do nothing but watch TV, and we're still doing that. I'm still finishing and watching TV shows, and, you know, they just keep going.
Now that it's warmer out, I won't see the TV but for sports very much.
Let me see.
Hey, you don't see your backyard. I see my backyard.
I see my backyard. It's like,
out the window. Yeah. I'm actually in my yard, and I do stuff.
I see it in the backyard. That's nice. Hey, there's stuff coming up. What is
that? While you're watching TV, you turn your head, you look at your backyard.
I don't even know what the plants are in the backyard. But, hey, those are coming up. Those are purple.
They're nice.
What kind of plants? I don't know. Purple ones and yellow ones. They look very pretty. You know, and I don't know. I'm going to try and make sure that the yard looks nice this year.
Well, because you're selling it.
Well, yeah, it'd be nice if it looks nice. Looks, you know, a nice curb appeal is what they say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, curb appeal. We'll see how that works out. So the White Sox taking on the Royals. It'll be Dylan Cease. Let's hope Dylan Cease can go a good, strong six innings. I would kill for six innings of Dylan Cease today.
Solid.
Yeah.
Solid
good,
six.
Solid six innings
yep.
of Dylan Cease.
That's what we need.
They go 7, 8, and 9. I like the way Tony's were running the bullpen going 7 and let the guy go into the eighth inning and then bring another guy in. We haven't even talked about that. We'll do that some other time. Talk about the way he's using the bullpen. We'll see how that works today. They should all be fresh after a couple days off.
Baseball under the sunshine.
Yeah, baseball under the sunshine. Stick around because we have White Sox baseball, Sox, and the Royals. Connor McKnight with the pregame right now.